is the Freedom Fiends Variety Hour, broadcasting from Pod Bay, Sit and Stay, a mile above sea level at Intergalactic Canine Studios. We alter your locus, Aurelius. I'm Marty, all over the place with my... See, look what you did to me, Shane. We do something or other. We loosen your leashes, unlatch those cage doors, and distract your handlers to keep the shock collar of statism from being clamped on your neck. Is it working? Can you feel it? Is it working, Shane?
It's working. I can feel it.
Obviously, it's not working on this end, but as always, the Freedom Fiends is covered by a PIPCOT, no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at PIPCOT.org. Worms. So we are here. We are the Freedom Fiends. I am Jeremy. I'm joined tonight by Shane. It's just the two of us. Michael's taking the night off. How you doing, Shane?
I'm doing pretty good, Jeremy. How about yourself?
Well, other than flubbing my own intro, I'm not too bad. Not too bad.
Well, that's probably my fault because that intro is the only one I don't quite have memorized, and I tried to get you to say it probably from heart. When that was one you probably had written down as well.
I actually do have that one written down on the original list that Michael gave me when I started of all the other intros, which I think is actually, you probably have an even more updated list than I do. But I had it and I was getting all cocky because we talked about it before the show. I said, oh, I'll take care of that. Oh, and yeah, I'll probably use that one because as I mentioned to you, that particular intro, I'm going to retire in a couple of months because once I shut down my business and leave this horribly, horribly Satan-forsaken place, it's not going to make a lot of sense anymore. And I got all cocky and said, oh, yeah, I know that one. No problem. And I didn't bother to pull up the list. And as soon as I went to go look at my show clock and realized that it stopped moving, and I was like, hey, we're probably starting soon. And you went, oh, yeah, we got 10 seconds. I went scrambling, couldn't find it in time, managed to mix the two intros together. But whatever, I got through it.
Yeah, that's similar to what happened, I think, on my first night. The first hour intro went well, but then the second hour intro, I flubbed a little bit, and Michael made me even more nervous, and I completely spaced the BIPCOT.
Well, that's all right. I mean, please, I remember you nailed the top of the top hour one right away, just from heart, which is impressive because Michael said it. And yeah, I still use my cheat sheet most of the time, and I don't think any of the other fiends, other than possibly Lou, have the entire thing memorized where they can say it, because they've I don't think everybody's done it enough where they actually have it down that far. So any hoodle. Yeah. So, well, starting off tonight, we got a bunch of stories lined up because it's just going to be the two of us. And it's always good to have stories just in case one of the two of us gets droned. That way we can talk, amongst ourselves until the other one can come back. And the first thing I wanted to touch on tonight was a tweet that I saw earlier today, which apparently is getting the rounds and has a lot of people up in a tizzy. And it comes from Chelsea Manning. And this tweet came out earlier today, and it says, taxation. This was in response to somebody else who apparently had made it, was in the conversation and was, referred to taxation as theft, which is something that we talk about on the show quite often. And Chelsea's response was, taxation is sharing of responsibility with the little rainbow symbol. And then only the wealthy believe that taxation is theft. And then a couple more symbols that I can't even make out at this point because my eyes start to get a little crazy after midnight. They don't pay taxes. We should make them. Now, for those who are maybe not aware, have lived under a rock or completely have no idea what we're talking about, Chelsea Manning, of course, is the former, I don't remember what part of the Army, Armed Forces, she was in the military, what went in as Bradley Manning and then came out as Chelsea Manning, but was, put in prison for quite a long time for, being a whistleblower, essentially being punished for, leaking information about some bad things the U.S. government was doing, which is, of course, is how they love to treat whistleblowers. And just released earlier this year, only a couple months back, I believe in March, April, maybe sometime around there, she was finally released. After she had been, pardoned by Obama on his way out. Now, right away, this came up in my feed somewhere, and I saw a whole bunch of people yelling and screaming about this. oh my God, you know, how horrible she said this. She's no hero, you know, not a hero. A couple people went so far as to say she's no longer a hero.
Yeah, I did see a couple reactions to that before knowing what people were reacting to. And I thought, well, come on now, that no matter what it was that they're talking about, that's an overreaction.
Well, yeah, I thought so too, because I mean, regardless of anything, I mean, short of her like murdering a whole like room full of people for no reason, you know, what is, or even then, what does that change the prior act for what she did? You know, if you thought, right. if you thought she was a hero for the action she took for, you know, revealing that information, that classified information about the U.S. government's doings, you know, if you thought she was a hero for that, why is she, you know, why is she all of a sudden not a hero for this? Just in general.
Right. Yeah. When I saw those reactions, I thought, well, what could she have possibly done, you know, to change everyone's mind? And really, it came to find out they were just holding her to our standards when she was never actually a libertarian in the first place.
Well, yeah, that was my initial reaction. And I got into this conversation with a couple of people today, and I even apparently angered a friend of mine, because I was very frank in my responses, because I stumbled into a conversation where multiple people were discussing it, and they were all saying how the word disappointed kept coming up. And one of my very good friends, Jason, even went so far as to say, you know, that you know, he's now, you know, used to view her as a hero. Now it's what did he say? Oh, I'm glad she's out of jail, but basically Feinstein her after this. And it's like, whoa. All right. Let's put this into perspective. Let's hold up for a second, because as you said, it's not like, not even was she not, she never like alluded to this, said it, in, or like claimed this in any way, never claimed to be an anarchist or even a libertarian or even a big L libertarian, never made any, like there was never any inklings of anything other than what she was dealing with at the time, you know. And if it was her political stances, you know, most people just automatically assume that she was, you know, a Democrat or an SJW or whatever, you know. But I don't recall her ever saying anything along those lines. So anything that anybody who thinks that they're now disappointed because she said this, it's like, well, all she's doing is just, you know, saying things that, you know, for who she is, because she never claimed to be anything different. She never claimed to be an anarchist. So, you know, and you know, the thought process I saw from some people is like, well, after, you know, after she's been like treated that way by the system, how could she still support the system? It's like, well, because she doesn't recognize what the problem with the system is.
Right. Yeah.
Sure. I'm sure she's not very happy about what the system did to her. I'm pretty sure, you know, without knowing her, without having ever spoken to her, I think that's a safe assumption that she's not thrilled about what happened to her because of how the system treated her. But, you know, if there's no inclination or no idea that she knew anything was wrong with the government outside of these wrongdoings that she mm-hmm. believed she stumbled across, right, you know, why would she automatically go there? You know, it's, you know,
yeah, I don't believe I've ever heard Chelsea talk about taxation at all before. And maybe that's the way she always felt about taxation, and we just never knew that until now. So yeah,
and you know, and like I said, even if she's you know, never espouse those views, has, and we just missed them, she's still, to, you know, to put it in the simplest terms, you know, if you're going to put it in the binary that so many people like to do, she never said anything about being an anarchist. So she thinks in that statist paradigm. That's how she thinks. Mm-hmm. And she did what she did because she thought she was doing the right thing in the terms of that paradigm.
Yeah.
So why is it so why is it so shocking that, you know, just because she was treated badly by the system doesn't mean, you know, I said this to a couple people and I got negative reactions from it, and it just confused me. I was like, I don't understand. This makes perfect sense to me, that I don't understand. Like, you seem to be emotional. I think that's why you're not getting it, you know, because if you're disappointed, you should be disappointed in yourself, because you like projected these ideas onto her that weren't
exactly
hers.
Yeah.
So if you're feeling let down right now, you did it to yourself. That's her. That's your failing, not hers. You know, am I happy that somebody who has this high level, high profile is making statements like this in public? No, of course not. But, you know, here's a chance to educate rather than ridicule or curse out, or as so many other people I saw, just, you know, usually, of course, right, more of like the alt-right persuasion, were all about, you know, oh, well, she's just a miserable commie POS or whatever. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
They're still very reactionary, even at this point, this late in the game. So, yeah.
Yeah, so I found it frustrating because, you know, like the way I left it off in a couple of different conversations, that I just left it at this, you know, I was like, she's a hero to me for what she did. She always will be. Nothing's going to change that she's a hero for that. You know, is she misguided? Sure. But that doesn't mean that can't still change. So to just dump on her and to just, like, you know, strip away your hero-dom or what from her.
Mm, yeah.
It just seems insane to me. I don't get people. I don't understand, you know. Or the people that were, like, you know, that were projecting all these ideas into her. Like, what did you expect, you know? Kind of, it reminds me of another individual who I actually kind of resurrected the other day in a meme. But the guy down in Texas, Brett Sanders, who made the big splash a couple of years ago, a year or two ago, with when he went in to pay a fine or a ticket in pennies, which people have done before, but he videoed it and it went viral, and he became a huge smash overnight with libertarians and anarchists and stuff like that. And then a lot of people were very put off when all of a sudden he started espousing all these, like, alt-right-esque views and became a huge Trump supporter. And it's like, and same type of thing, same type of outrage ensued. And back then, same situation. I was like, really? Really? When did this guy ever say he was an anarchist or libertarian? Why are y'all so upset?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
I guess some of us just assumed that he was.
Yeah, well, I mean, people want to cling. They're so desperate to find liberty anywhere that they're willing to jump onto things. And instead of ask more questions, they assume, and then they disappoint themselves. So,
learn.
I don't know. Yeah.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Making the world a better place with great liberty media is not easy, but it is effective. Making the world a better place with great liberty media doesn't even pay very much at all. Sometimes we even have to pay out of our own pockets, but we do it because we have to, for you. And for the children. Here at the Freedom Fiends, we've been producing amazing and effective liberty media every day since 2011. Radio shows, podcasts, movies, music, cryptocurrencies, and yes, even memes. The Freedom Fiends also run the world's only liberty media teaching hospital and the world's only voluntarist media university. Our hands-on classes educate and shape hundreds of the great liberty speakers of today and tomorrow. And they, in turn, will teach and inspire others. Heck, even the ones who got fired or quit in a huff still hold useful skills and equipment to hone their own Liberty Media and teach others. Freedom Fiends Media and our students' media is a rising groundswell to help create happy Liberty lives around the world, and maybe even on to Alpha Centauri. Kitty cats and puppies like living in Liberty homes more than in statist homes. So please donate to the Freedom Fiends, if only for the kitties. Hashtag please donate Freedom Fiends, think of the kitties.
So we're back. And last segment, we were talking about the tweet heard around the world today from Chelsea Manning about taxation that has so many anarchists and libertarians up in a tizzy. And one of the things we talked about was the fact that a lot of people were just denouncing her right now and kind of like almost being willing to forget what she had done and just saying, you know, no longer a hero, and oh, just a worthless socialist or commie, and that whole idea of just shutting down conversation and not even attempting a dialogue because you believe somebody thinks a certain thing that you just think is, there's no chance, you know, there's no hope in talking to them whatsoever, kind of ties in nicely to this next article that I came across earlier today from the Libertarian Institute by Christopher West, that's titled, "Your Enemies Are Not Monsters, An Olive Branch Across the Divide." And this was, I really dug this article. This was, I could definitely take this advice to heart a lot more often, because I'm good at preaching it, and I've been trying to be better over this time, but I still get points where I shut down a conversation on based on ideas in my own head rather than what the person is actually presenting to me, and not even bothering. So you want to start this little piece off for us
here? Sure, same here. I'm guilty of the same thing. And the article starts off like this. It says, "Certain highs given by alcohol, laughing gas, huffing paint, and the like give a sense of euphoria by depriving the brain of oxygen. You can get a similar high by climbing a mountain where the air gets thinner. And there is no mountain so high where the thin air fills one with such sweet euphoria as the moral high ground. This spot of superiority, where you gaze down at your enemies, whom you imagine as ants, pests, and vermin, fills your breast with a sense of certainty. I am right, and they are terrible."
Yeah, that is a very powerful opening statement. I'm a big, yeah. You were remarking that you really enjoyed that when you read that, and I did too. I got a kick out of that because it's true, and I know that I've been there. I've been there plenty of times when you feel that, you know, you're the morally superior one. It feels good, you know. Well, I don't even have to argue with you. You're just wrong because reasons,
right?
Essentially,
yeah. A lot of times I'll take I used to take the moral high ground or the ethical or logical high ground and be like, no, you're wrong because logic, you know, and just try to shut down the debate at that point and not even move on. I wouldn't be open-minded to listen to what they had to say or anything like that. I would just kind of reject it and not be open to new ideas.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. And, you know, I was saying, you know, I still struggle with this. It's you know, it's tough, especially when you've thought a certain way for a long time. Where you've used a certain method for a long time, and it's had like, so even if it's had some success, you're probably, you know, I get lazy and I don't bother to change things. So I'm definitely guilty of doing it even to this day. But like I said, I try to be better about it. But there's so many people that just shut down a whole having any dialogue with whole segments of populations, you know, in our circles, in the anarchist libertarian circles, you know, currently it's, you know, those of more of the alt-right persuasion, you know, categorize anybody they disagree with as leftists. And a lot of them have uttered phrases as, there's no point in talking to them, there's no reaching leftists. And then when you all of a sudden become part of that group to them, then it's like, well, I guess you don't think there's any point in trying to reach me, so there's no, yeah, you know, no conversation can be had.
That's such a false dichotomy.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Of course. Which is ironic because people like that are the ones, and even myself to an extent when I did that too, you know, are the ones who pride themselves on being logical. And it's like, you know, they completely miss the fact that it's like you're stepping into one of the most common fallacies, you know, repeatedly, and then denouncing anybody else who does the same, of course. Now, this particular article was actually, I think it was pretty much done as a response to another article written by a Kayla Chadwick, which was entitled, "I Don't Know How to Explain to You That You Should Care About Other People," which I read that article too, and I'll link both in the show notes. But this one was pretty much the stereotype. Of course, here I am talking about trying to deal with people and not just shutting down debate with words, but I'm going to say it. The stereotypical screechy SJW response that, like, you know, my enemies are horrible, they're monsters, there's no reasoning with them. And it was the typical, you know, the typical straw men of people who talk about the free market, you know, which is, you know, because well, we'll talk about more when we get back from the break. But quickly, her accusations with things like, you know, all my enemies want families to starve. They want children to be deprived of information, education. They want sick people to die, and they don't feel empathy at all. So that type of, you know, sound reasoning.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends Radio Show. I've run websites since 1996 and have used over a dozen web hosts in that time. AgoristHosting.com is the only one that hasn't broken my heart. Agorist Hosting's uptime and service is stellar, and their DDoS mitigation is the best I've seen. That's important because if you tell the truth in this world, you'll ruffle feathers. No matter what the haters hit us with, Agorist Hosting keeps our websites online. If you have a mission-critical commercial presence or a world-changing activism site, go with AgoristHosting.com.
So we're back. I'm still Jeremy. That's still Shane. And we were talking about this article from the Libertarian Institute about, you know, trying to remind people that your enemies are not necessarily monsters. And as we hit the break, I was talking about the article that this was actually in response to by this woman, Kayla Chadwick, who went kind of ranty about how she couldn't just, she's obviously talking about it from the political aspect. You know, I'm guessing she's some kind of Democrat, and she was talking about the Republicans. But the whole theme of it was, you know, basically she can't, her enemies are basically monsters because there's no reaching them. They have no empathy whatsoever. And it's the typical, you know, this, what's that? It's a Bastiat quote. I'm probably going to screw it up, but you know, basically, whenever the socialist hears we don't want the government doing something, they assume we don't want it done at all.
Right.
You know, that's the paraphrase of it. But that's basically how a lot of these people think. You know, we were talking earlier about you mentioned false dichotomy, Shane, and that's exactly what it is here. Oh, you don't want the government to do this thing? You must not want it done at all. And these are attacks that get levied constantly at anybody who refers to the free market, whether it be the faux free market that the Republicans talk about or an actual free market that anarchist and agorist and stuff like that talk about, you know, whenever somebody's attached to that label, a lot of those accusations go flying a lot. And it's interesting to see because, you know, for the longest time being part of the statist paradigm, I got used to being involved in these conversations. Now I didn't recognize myself shutting anybody down because of their ideas like this, or, you know, I didn't even recognize other people doing it on that level, but I was always somewhat conscious of it, you know, how people can act like this and get all crazy about things when it comes to politics and not actually listen to the other side. You know, right. But then when I came to anarchism and voluntarism, I kind of hoped I was going to be escaping that a little bit. And then the luster quickly came off and I realized that people are just insane on this side of the fence. Usually because they have a lot of times is what I've termed it as the residual statism. And it's just that it's still thinking in that very binary way that the government essentially trains you to think in. You know, that, you know, things like, you know, the government must do this or nobody else can do it. You know, any black and white type stuff, it's got to be this. You're either a Democrat or a Republican. Like, they want you to they want you to think like that. They don't, you know, the people who call themselves government, they don't want you thinking, for the most part, they don't want you thinking about other choices. They don't want you to thinking about other options, because just like anything else, you start thinking about more options there, then you're going to start thinking of more options in general. Well, if it's really okay to have this other thought process, like even the full libertarianism of the Libertarian Party, like if that's acceptable and I can't get what I want through the system, then why isn't it acceptable to start a whole new system where we're more like this? You know, you can't have the slaves on the plantation thinking that. Those are dangerous thoughts. So they, you know, you're kind of made to think in that very binary way a lot of the times. So it's easy to slip into that, and it's apparently a lot harder to shake it because, you know, I've seen so many people over the past couple of years, people that I, as you know, cheesy as it may sound, kind of came to anarchism together with, like, we all kind of found each other around the same time during one of the last surges shortly, you know, it was pretty much shortly after the 2012 election, like that surge that restarted again, where all of a sudden people were like, well, this is horrible. It just went, it went on like 2008 was bad enough for people like us with the Ron Paul thing. Then 2012, oh, it was even worse. Like, you know, so it's like, we all give up.
It was.
So a whole bunch of people all converged after that. Cause it's like, we give up, there's nothing to do. But it's hard to shake that, I guess, like, you know, because people are still stuck like that and just, you know, like I said earlier, comes up with like the more alt-right crowd or just the right libertarian crowd, whatever they want to call themselves, these people, you know, it's just, you don't agree with us, you're a commie, so there's no point even talking to you. And they essentially think every communist is a thief. And every communist would kill them if it came down to it. Like, you know, so it's like they're thinking the same exact thing. They're thinking that these people are monsters. And I'm apparently in that camp now, according to them, which is just funny. Really, really funny. I do revel in their tears. It makes it does make me.
Well, to them, anyone to the left of Pinochet is a leftist. So that would include pretty much almost everyone.
Yeah,
everyone else.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I thought this article, like I said, it's even though the author was kind of addressing this piece, you know, by this other woman through a lot of it, the ideas that he was talking about, you know, still hold true in a lot of different scenarios. And I actually posted it earlier, and I was hoping more people would read it and check it out because, you know. There's a couple lines in here. So the whole idea is like, you know, we are good, they're bad, and you can justify antisocial and immoral behavior like refusing to talk to another human being because, quote, you know, in parentheses, you tell yourself they aren't really human, they're bad. Which is essentially, you know, it. You know, it's the same thing as how people, how the war machines of the centuries have continued to be pumped out because they convince their soldiers. You know, the soldiers are convinced that their opponents are inhuman. That you have to
dehumanization.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So that's the whole idea. And this is just, this is the same exact thing, just on a slightly less violent level. And I say slightly less because, you know, if you meet some of these people, they're not too far from doing some of this crazy stuff, you know. But the article continues. We all know that reality is much more complicated, but simple stories are powerful. They move us precisely because they are simple. And if the problem is simple, then the solution can be simple, too. And there's a quote here from Alexander Solzhenitsyn. I can never pronounce the name correctly, but I think I got that pretty close. If only it were so simple. Alexander was a victim of Stalin's forced labor camps. If only there were evil people somewhere insidiously committing evil deeds, and it were necessary only to separate them from the rest of us and destroy them. But the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being.
Yes, it does.
Yeah, of course. You know, we all have that dichotomy. That dichotomy does exist as much as dichotomies exist. I caught myself there. but within all of us, you know, nobody's purely good. Nobody's purely bad. And when you denounce an entire segment of a population, or you cut them off and refuse to have anything to do with them, even if it's based on the idea that the overarching banner that they're all running under to a certain extent, even if that idea is bad, that doesn't mean that every individual that you can find and somehow twist to attach to that label is also bad.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Guilt by association.
Yeah. Most of the people, most of the time, you know, which is interesting to me because when I bring this up in other instances, most of these same people would agree with me that on the whole, most people are followers. most people are not leaders. Most people are go with the flow type of people. So a lot of these people who, even ones who espouse some of these ideas, whether it be whether it be Marxism or so, you know, some version of socialism or any of the or some, you know, Scientology, you know, whatever it is that you think is crazy and could harm people, you know, and has harmed people. These people, just because they're espousing it, doesn't mean they're a horrible human being. It doesn't mean they're actually going to steal your stuff. It may just mean maybe, just maybe, they're ignorant. They're honestly ignorant of better or different ideas because their minds have been shaped by a certain system, by certain people, and they don't know any different. And anytime they've encountered a different idea, they've been surrounded by the rest of the people who agree with them, and they all shout you down, and they don't actually have to think about these things, you know? I mean, I don't know. Uh-huh. I look back at myself before I became an anarchist. I was pretty clueless for a long time, you know?
Oh, man. I was so close to figuring it out for almost 20 years. It was right under my nose all along as a minarchist, and I just didn't quite stumble on it until, 2012, 2013, you know? So,
well, see, well, okay, maybe that's worse than Shane. I finally stumbled upon it, and I was like, oh, I smacked myself like in a Homer Simpson moment, and I was like, oh, I get it now. But no, it still took me a little while after that. But I was clueless for a long time. So I'm thankful that people didn't want to just completely not talk to me and not give me the time of day and say that I'm completely hopeless or you know, worthless or a waste, or that just because I believe certain things that meant that I was going to steal their stuff. It's like, well, that wasn't the case. I'm glad nobody, or at least enough people, didn't think that at the time, because otherwise I may not be here right now.
Right. The people that eventually got through to me were the ones who didn't think in these false dichotomies of black and white. They knew that everything was, you know, shades of gray, so to speak, and that you could probably meet someone in the middle and get them to kind of not compromise, but see the common ground that everyone has and build on that.
Yeah, exactly. And, it's tough for a lot of people to do. It's really tough for me because I'm somebody who likes to be very straightforward and pound, like, you know, logic and conversations and not try to think about another person's position. You know, it was really hard for me to try to step back and actually want to do that. And again, I'm far from perfect at it, but I see the benefits of, you know, having these conversations and not giving up, because you never know what stupid thing the government's going to do next that's going to actually be the trigger for somebody, you know, because I still believe, I've said this plenty of times before and I'll say it again, I still believe that in pretty much everybody outside of, like, you know, true sociopaths and psychopaths, inside of everybody, there is that aha moment. It's just a matter of finding. It's just a matter of figuring out what it is that's going to take that person and go, oh, I get it. Yeah, this really isn't good. There really is a lot of bad things here that I've been missing, you know? So if you give up on them too quickly, I think it's a waste.
Worms.
We'll be back after this trip to the market.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
When this final element issues, it's not because I need to know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed, buy sheep for sheep on jeep,
and Bitcoin, 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 Bitcoin.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says,
Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If you're a real true fiend, then gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big but now are small. If you're a real true fiend, then gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big, but now are small. If a real true fiend, gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big, but now are small. If a real true fiend, gotta collect them all. Fiend buttons are the thing for me. Some bigger than they used to be. Others once were big, but now are small. If a real true fiend, gotta collect them all.
Yeah. Oh.
talking about this article from the Libertarian Institute about trying to recognize that your opponents aren't necessarily monsters. And just to finish this off before we go into the second hour, the end of this article is great. I love his last paragraph. It says, I hope reading this has helped release some of the hostility you feel towards those who disagree with you. There are good reasons to love our enemies, not the least of which is the knowledge we gain when we reach across the aisle and have a conversation with someone whose opinions seem monstrous. Simple stories about monsters are fairy tales for children, better reserved for campfire tales than serious political dialogue. A complex, nuanced view of reality is the hard-won reward of adult conversations. And I really like that. And, you know, like I was saying earlier, you know, I need to take a lot more of this to heart more often because that really is true. And he was responding to a specific article, like I said, you can take this and use it. This could be applied in a lot of other situations. And
oh, yeah. Not just, you know, among other anarchists, but in anarchists interacting with non-anarchists. You know, we got to use this because, I mean, I tended in the past to, you know, like I said, be more hardcore logic and stuff like that. But there are those who did not use logic to arrive at their conclusions, and they didn't use logic and reason to arrive at those conclusions. They're not going to be reasoned out of them either.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're going to have to find another way to relate to them and find common ground that you can build on. And that's why, like, you know, I get into the whole compassionate approach these days. You know, you try to relate to their point of view and then work from there. And it tends to have a lot better results, in my opinion.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, it's, I mean, sure, you can yell at people and you can call them names and you can write entire segments of the population off. I mean, if that's what makes you happy, sure, fine. But, you know, I to me, at least as far as the libertarian and anarchist circles that I travel in, at least as far as those go, you know, if you really want to make a freer world, you know, it's really gonna help if you have more people who kind of think like you. They don't have to think like you all the way, but as long as they start to see the real problems with government and want to start looking for solutions outside of government, yeah, they can still be your ally to a certain extent. I know that's really hard for a lot of people to believe and understand. You know, this goes back to when we started talking about this, and I talked about people how they shut these, you know, we're going to write you people off and we can't have anything to do with you. We don't want anything to do with you. You know, even so far as the tossing you out of helicopters, as some of these people yeah. like to say, but
right.
you know, how are you going to get to where you want to be if it just this tiny little segment of the population believes what you believe? How are you ever going to get anywhere? I mean, if you're just happy to sit around and theorize about this stuff, then I guess that's fine. But I am well past that. I mean, I spent my first couple of years traveling down the path to anarchy, being all about the theories and trying to study as many of them as I can and try to come up with some of my own and try to figure out, you know, how things would actually look. And then that would be part of the argument when I would talk to people and when I present my case. It'd be like, well, this is how things would work in theory and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. at a certain point, I realized, yeah, okay, that's great. What does it really look like, though?
Yeah, we don't want to be too harsh with people who either haven't heard these theories or don't quite understand them, because if we turn too many people off, then we're not going to really appeal to that wider base. So, you know, we don't want to turn people away. You know, we got to try to relate to them. You're going to catch more flies with honey than vinegar, basically.
Yeah, although this came up the other day, and I ended up poking fun at my buddy Jason, who I mentioned earlier, because I said, "Yeah, that might be true, but I'm still pretty sure that you collect even more flies with Paul Schumer."
Oh, I saw that too. Yep.
So, you know, but I get, you know, that cliche just drives me nuts, but I do understand. It does make sense, you know. If you don't want to try to connect with people, of course not. But if you really want to try to make a difference and try to change people's minds, then yeah, maybe, just maybe, it helps to not think they're monsters just because they don't agree with you.
out of worms.
Well, with that, we're going to head off to the break, take a long trip to the market, and we will be back for the second hour when we get to welcome another Foosh and Sundance to the party.
Del Foosh.
Worms.
Hi, this is Mark Edge of Free Talk Live. Michael W. Dean's book, User's Manual for the Human Experience, changed my life. In a culture that attempts to turn you into a compliant victim, this book gives you implementable steps on everything from how to be aware of your environment walking down the street to business, to how to handle a toxic person in your life. If you're a human, you need to read this book at least once. Go to Amazon and get the Kindle version, or paperback, or an audiobook of A User's Manual for the Human Experience.
Welcome back to the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's Low Orbit Ion Cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza on the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. As always, Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments and government agents. To learn more about this, go to BIPCOT.org. And we're back.
Yes, back for the second hour. I am Jeremy. That's Shane. We're still here. And we get to welcome here the second hour, Belle Fouche. It's North Dakota. I hope that's right. I always screw that up. And Sundance, Wyoming. Belle Fouche, my favorite town to say. Because it's such a wonderful word. But welcome. Thanks for joining us this evening. So
it is fun to say.
It is. It's like, you know, I like words, you know. I make fun of language a lot these days, and because I'm somebody who used to be a big stickler for language, and you know, words have meanings, but you know, which they do, but they change over time, and they become accepted vernacular. You know, they change, they become different things, and then that becomes the accepted vernacular, and you know, so they're not. To use a word that's become popularized for other reasons, they're fluid. Words are fluid, you know. But just the sounds of different words. Like I remember, there's way back in the day when I was big into the sports balls. I became obsessed with finding the coolest sounding names from every sport. And I actually had a list for a while. Like I found the guys in sports. Like there was this baseball player. Now he went by the name Archie. But his actual name was Archimedes, and his last name was Cianfrocco. So Archimedes Cianfrocco is just a really cool name to me. It just rolls off the tongue nicely. Yeah.
You're right. It actually does.
Yes. You know. There's probably tons of them now, but it's been so long since I followed them. But back in the day, there was a tennis player, Yevgeny Kafelnikov. You know, another name, just fun to say.
Yeah.
So Belle Fouche, believe me, I'm not mocking you in any way, shape, or form. The name of your town really is fun for me to say, and I love getting to say it every night that I'm on the show. So welcome, folks. Thank you. Thank you for putting up with my horrible torturing of saying your town's name over and over and over again. I'm probably going to get a letter one day saying, you're actually not even pronouncing it right. It's like Belle Fosh. You idiots. But anyway... So in the first hour, we talked a lot about an article that I found from the Libertarian Institute about it was a response letter to another article. But the theme of the article was to, you know, not view your enemies, whether it be political or whatnot, as monsters just because of their ideas. You know, if they are monsters, it's one thing. But just because they have a different idea than you, or just because they may have evidence that your idea has proven to be very, very bad in the past, and they just want to point that out to you, you know, kind of when it comes to things like that were actually mentioned in that article, like the minimum wage, or government controlling the healthcare system, you know, like... when it comes to stuff like that, you know, just because somebody disagrees with you doesn't mean they're a horrible person that wants everybody to die. That's not the case. Some of them may. That is true. I'm not going to deny
it. You hate poor people.
Yes, yes. We don't all hate poor people. No, I don't hate poor people. I was going to say, No, I don't. I feel very badly because I know a lot of people who are poor that are in that position because of the horrible things the government does. Speaking of horrible things that government does, I actually have a follow-up from a story that we briefly touched on during last week's Tuesday night, Wednesday morning show with James Weeks. It was James Weeks, Daryl Becker, and I. And it was a story about this product that had just started hitting the market in New York called Coco Loco, which is a snortable chocolate powder, which is also mixed with other ingredients normally found in energy drinks, like what was it, taurine and stuff like that, the ones that are usually found in all the different energy drinks, the Red Bulls and Monsters and all that stuff. That was in it too. So that story I found last week, and I thought it was funny because I'd never heard of it before. But apparently, this has been something that's been going on in Europe for the past. It's been a fad in Europe for the past couple of years. And from what I can tell, there hasn't been like this widespread report of deaths from Europe from people doing stuff.
Yeah, I'm surprised I haven't heard of it, and that's probably why, is because they can't really sensationalize it.
Yeah, you would think there would be, you know, because Europe, for the most part, I mean, there's a lot of the countries their drug laws are a lot more lax. Thankfully, it's not as insane as the U.S. But you would think if people were dropping dead regularly from this, that the news would get out. So, but anyway, as I said, we have a follow up to this because, of course, that story, you know, apparently it's only been on the market for a couple of weeks in New York, I believe, but already, speaking of things that government, horrible things that government do, one of my least favorite human beings probably ever graced this earth, because I've had to live under his tyranny pretty much the entire time I've been here in New York, Chuck Schumer, already is pretty much begging the FDA to regulate snortable chocolate because it could be dangerous and we don't know what could happen, so we have to make sure we get control of it right away. Good old Chucky. Because he's worried. Chuck's worried, as it says in the article, that it could prove to be more harmful, and because it's being marketed like a drug. So, like I said, on Tuesday night, Wednesday morning last week, I read briefly from an article that was talking about this. Only a few days later, on Saturday, Schumer was already writing a letter to the Food and Drug Administration saying that they need to investigate products such as Coco Loco immediately because there's too many unanswered questions. And his quote, "This suspect product has no clear health value." Who cares? I can't think of a single...
Does it have to?
Yeah, exactly. Is it harming anyone? Not that we know of. Is it people being forced to do it? No. So to continue, good old Chucky's quote, "I can't think of a single parent who thinks it's a good idea for their children to be snorting over-the-counter stimulants up their noses." End quote. Right away, he's got to go to the children. Not that there's a mention anywhere of kids snorting chocolate. Not that there's this epidemic of middle schoolers trading, going hungry at lunch so they can go to the store afterwards and buy an ounce of this stuff. None of that. Just good old Chucky's got it in his head that we need. You know, we don't know enough about it, so that means we need to regulate it. We don't know enough about it. Let's figure out what it is and what's going on with it first before we make any decisions, which would be the rational thing to do. No. This is how people, now, of course, this, you know, kind of goes against the grain of what we were talking about in the first hour about, you know, not viewing your opponents as monsters. But in this case, it's true. Chuck Schumer is a monster. This guy is a very, very, very bad man. He's been a very, very, very bad man for a very, very, very long time.
Schmucky Chucky Schumer.
Yeah, like I said, I'm pretty sure. I could look it up. I'm just too lazy now. I'm pretty sure Chuck's been he's at least been in the new, been either Congress or representative, because I think he was a rep first, maybe. But I believe he's been either both or at least or even a senator the entire time I've lived here on the since I moved back to New York again. And he's just right on top of, you know, that whole quote that always gets attributed to Rahm Emanuel, but is actually much, much older than him, much, much older than all of us. You know, never let a good crisis go to waste. It's an idea that's been going on forever. Chucky doesn't even wait for crises. Chucky tries to create crises.
It seems
and
like.
So then he can attack him. Like, he needs to get on top of everything. Like, he was another one who was big on when the Kratom thing was going on, when the first time they tried to make Kratom a Schedule I drug. Right. He was one of the ones leading the charge on that. You know, just like I said, it's not a matter of we don't have enough information, let's try to gain more information. No, let's have it under our control, and then we'll figure things out. but first, we have to control it. We have to. That's like, you know, utmost. So yeah, this just I mean, this is obviously very typical, and I should not be surprised, but it just he manages to anger me so every time I catch a story of him doing something, especially this, just like, in my opinion, heinous, you know, just going after something right away and putting it even, you know, if the FDA wasn't looking at it or considering it because, you know, well, it's chocolate powder and stuff that's, you know, and all these other ingredients that are already out there in all these other products, you know, that people are using. And yes, using a lot of things in excess can be a problem, but that doesn't mean the FDA needs to regulate it. You know,
but think of the children.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't know how many kids are going out and snorting the chocolate. I mean,
no, I don't know. Actually, I've never heard of anyone actually doing this before. I mean, I got to say, I'm a little bit interested. You had me at chocolate.
Yeah. Now, of course, the weird, ironic thing, maybe the name of the company that sells Coco Loco is called Legal Lean, the Legal Lean company, because they make a version of that stuff. You know, the stuff lean. That allegedly Trayvon Martin was trying to make the night that George Zimmerman killed him.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
You know, the purple drank. But they have a company that they make stuff, so they're the ones who are putting this out. And you know, it sells for $20 for an ounce and a quarter. Wait a minute, it says 1.25 ounce, and then it says 3.5 grams on the side. That doesn't make any sense, because
that's not accurate.
Yeah, that should be 0.25 the ounce. It should be a quarter of an ounce, right? Yeah, that's an eighth of an ounce. That's an eighth. Jeez,
it should be 0.125 ounce. Actually, it would be an eighth of an ounce.
Yeah. There you go. Thank you.
Yeah,
they put the decimal point in the wrong spot. That's what threw me off. I'm like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. I know I went to public school and all my maths. I don't do the math that well, but something still seemed fishy. But worms. Yeah, like I said, just leave it to Chucky, man. Just leave people alone. I really wish he would go away. I really wish he would just go away. It's almost worth voting for to get him out, but he just won't until he dies.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
You're special. You're better than those geeky nerds who use Android phones. They think they're so smart. But you're one of the beautiful people who has an iPhone. So the Freedom Fiends moved heaven and earth to make an iPhone app just for you. iPhone users are elite, and the Freedom Fiends know this. And we've handcrafted this artisanal app just for you. It's gorgeous, like you. And like you, it's functional and then some. The app is free, and it's called Freedom Reeducation Camp. Go to iTunes and get Freedom Reeducation Camp today, because you inspire joy feelings in everyone around you. That's Freedom Reeducation Camp. Spend some time today in Freedom Reeducation Camp. That's Freedom Reeducation Camp.
we're back.
And we're back.
Yeah, we're talking about Chucky Schmucky Schumer in the last segment. My unfortunate senator. I can't help it. I really despise that man. I really do. I don't throw words around like despise and hate about a lot of people, but I have had the misfortune the entire time I've lived since I moved back to New York in the mid 90s of living under him and also Peter King as my representative, who's like another horrible, horrible, horrible human being.
Tell us how you really feel.
Oh, I can't, unfortunately, FCC regulations. Yeah. I can't tell you how I really feel about these two individuals, but yeah, they're horrible. King's even worse, obviously, because he's my rep, and I've moved multiple times, and every time I moved, his district got gerrymandered the next year, so I was still in his district.
Oh, didn't matter. He's following you.
He is. It's like no matter what I do, he's always around. It's a horrible, man. But yeah, he is. So yeah, those guys are horrible. But we were talking during the break about food. That's a much happier topic. We were talking about bacon, and you know, we've discussed this on air with Lou before. And I don't care what Lou says. Baked bacon is a perfectly acceptable way of having your bacon. Especially if you're like me and you don't like the cleanup that is involved with making bacon in a pan on a stovetop where you end up with grease splattered all over the place no matter what you try to do. Especially if you have little kids who are asking you a million questions and want to watch and often want to try to help and do other things in the middle of it. It gets messy. So putting it in there, much better way.
I have yet to actually try it that way, but I think I might.
You guys need to do it. The next time you make bacon, I'm telling you. You set it up, like I said, you get yourself, you can either use, if you have a cast iron skillet, a lot of my friends do it that way, you can put it straight in the cast iron skillet and put it in there. I like to use roasting pans lined with something, so for easy pour off, because I, like my grandmother, still keep, well, I used to actually keep a ceramic mug like she did, but now I got a little more advanced than her. Now I keep a mason jar next to my stove that is always has bacon fat in it. I actually had another one for a little while that had duck fat in it, which is really delicious, because I had duck a month or two ago. Good stuff too. But I always keep that right there for easy pour off, and you can control the cooking just like you can on a pan. You just have to, you know, take a time or two to get used to the timing of your stove, of your oven, you know, the heating of your oven, you know, and, I did from the beginning. The thing that I found to do is like, yeah, just put it in the pan, throw it in the oven cold, and start at 400 degrees for half an hour. And when you come back, voila! And sure enough, first time I did it, it was a little bit overdone because my oven, you know, the oven times may vary. But I figured out the sweet spot on mine is between 25 and 27 minutes, and it comes out beautifully, nice and crispy. You know, you cook a little longer if you want it a little crispier. You cook a little less if you're like one of those weird people that likes those soggy strips of bacon. Like, I don't really understand why you would want that. I don't mind it if you're eating fried bacon, like with Lou, when he's got that giant crock pot of bacon going and stuff.
Once the grease gets to a certain level, you can't really avoid it that much.
Yeah, but there's always going to be like one little section that doesn't get as much as the other, so it's a little bit softer or whatever. Like, I'll eat that stuff. It's great. I don't mind it. But like, you know, there are people that like it like really soggy, like that the whole way through, which is like, oh man, that's just gross. Like, what's wrong with you? that's sacrilegious right there. You know, forget about the bacon versus frying debate. You're gonna eat your bacon like that. You don't even deserve to have it cooked either way. You should be getting that already cooked bacon that they advertise here on GCN that I hear all the time. I'm sure you would love that. You know, sounds like that's right up your alley. But and then what else was I saying during the break? Because now I'm hungry and I'm talking about this. Oh, eggs. Yeah, I learned. See, all these things you learned about cooking all these years that if I had actually asked for directions earlier on, I don't think I would have got it. things like cook things a lot slower. You know, my grandmother would have told me that. My mom was always in a rush to cook, so if I'd ask her, she would have never told me these things.
Yeah, I did the same thing. I'd always try to cook it faster because I was in a hurry and didn't realize that it makes a big difference if you cook it slower.
It's like, oh, the recipe says 350. Well, I only have 15 minutes. If I jack it up to 450, it'll get done in, what's the math on that? It's like, no, you idiot.
Faster than expected.
Yes, and that's how you burn your food and destroy it. It's not good for you. Don't do things like that. So, yes. But, yeah, now that I've talked about all this food and stuff like that, I really want to eat. And luckily, it looks like we're coming up to a trip to the market, so I'm going to have to go to the market and see if I can find anything in this house that I'm not going to involve cooking, because I don't think I'll make it back in time. I don't want to leave it alone that long, Shane. That would be mean. Come back to the end of the next segment. Hey, man, I made myself a steak. Want some? We'll be back.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Ever struggle for the right thing to say at a party? Want something to break the ice? Get the free Freedom Fiends Android app, Pocket Alibi. Pocket Alibi will help you have things to say. It'll replace verbal communication when you're not speaking with somebody.
I value your input.
It'll make you the hit of any party.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Will it work?
Not a guarantee.
It's a great icebreaker, too. Comes loaded with hundreds of original funny sayings with great voices and great recording quality. It's arranged into 7 categories. Disclaimers.
You should never do the thing I'm talking about.
Excuses.
I'm sorry, sir. An older girl told me to do it.
Advice. Fun, too.
Get off me, kitty.
Libertarian pickup lines.
Hey, baby, hold my camera while I yell at this meter maid.
State speech is hate speech.
Bark, bark for the state.
Get Pocket Alibi today on Google Play for free. Again, search for Pocket Alibi. That's Pocket Alibi, A-L-I-B-I.
Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi.
Does this app make me look fat?
And we're back. I'm still Jeremy. That's still Shane.
I'm still Shane.
Yep. And so we're done talking about food for the moment. We had another story that's, you know, thanks government. But this one really kills me. This story comes from the Dallas Morning News. And the headline is, IRS shuts down mom and pop dressmaker, sells dresses within hours.
Horrible.
Yeah, so this story starts off. The unmarked vehicles arrived in the morning. More than 20 armed agents poured out. Hours later, Mies Bridal and Tuxedo was out of business after serving customers for decades. Its entire inventory of wedding gowns and dresses, as well as sewing machines and other equipment, were sold at auction. The hastily called sale held inside the store netted the IRS, not them, the IRS, $17,000. Not enough to cover the roughly $31,400 in tax debt alleged, that the court records show. That balance is now likely unrecoverable, because they sold everything these people own.
Mm-hmm. For pennies on the dollar at that.
Yes. So, the story continues. Mies, a small garland business owned by an elderly immigrant couple from Thailand, was never accused in court of violating any federal laws. The owners, Tony, and I'm not even going to try to butcher their last name, and his wife are fighting back, which is good news that they're trying to sue, but if they're actually going to win, who knows. But they're suing the government in federal court in Dallas for over $1.8 million because it alleges the IRS violated its own code of procedures during this tax seizure, which happened way back in 2015. So They're just starting to, they're finally getting a lawsuit up against us now. But they, you know, that sounds familiar, doesn't it? Government violating its own laws to get what it wants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Seems to be a theme. So, yeah, I mean, these stories are always horrible, but it's like, here you go. Here's a couple that it's, you know, it says they're immigrants. Doesn't say they're illegal immigrants, and you think that would come up in one of these stories. So they're obviously, you know, they migrated here legally.
Right.
For the people that type of thing matters. And had their business open for, they opened it up in 83. So 22 years when the IRS finally shut this down. And, you know, they just, they came in, And they said, you can't do this anymore. And then, oh, you can't pay us the money. Oh, we'll get the money for you. And they just jumped over every hoop possible and just had the auction there on the spot.
And this is after having not even charged them with any crime.
Yes.
So this is theft, any way you look at it.
Yeah, take the taxation as theft part of it out of the equation for the time being. Yeah, this is just straight up theft too. And actually, it's even worse. It's armed robbery because they had people with guns there that said, yeah, we're going to take this and you're not going to stop us. So it was armed robbery. The story, you know, there's a quote from the lawsuit itself, which says the agents auctioned off before their very eyes the family's entire life savings for pennies on the dollar, end quote. And, you know, as I alluded to, it even says in the article, allegations of improprieties against the IRS for its asset seizures are not new. The agency has been under fire in recent years for seizing the bank accounts of mom and pop businesses due to their banking transactions. Because now, because they have the, you know, certain the requirement limit of like $10,000, you have to report anything over 10, you know, deposits, or if you're carrying, if you're coming to the country through customs, they have that, you know, that magic arbitrary limit, $10,000.
Right.
You need to report this to us. They've started taking to any small business that was putting somewhere just under that $10,000 limit in. Regardless of whether or not that just happened to be their sales for the week or the day or whatever it is, they were just automatically flagging anybody that did this, and they're like, "Oh, you're going to try to skirt paying taxes because you're not putting in the full $10,000. You're putting in $999. Like, so we're just going to harass you until we can find that you're doing something. And even if we can't, we're just going to insist that you're doing something. And while we wait to prove that we're doing something, we're just going to take all your stuff and sell it because we can do this much better than you can."
I highly doubt that.
Well, of course, because, you know, nothing the government ever claims to do, it does well, except kill people. Oh, actually, that's not true. It only does that in war, and it doesn't like to claim that it does that. When it tries to do it by, like, killing people, it actually screws that up a lot of the times. There's been plenty of times during, like, you know, death sentence, you know, when people were supposed to be getting a death sentence, and it gets screwed up.
Yeah.
And they actually survive the so-called lethal injection or the chair. There's enough stories about that. So the government even screws that up. You know, that's the IRS claim, that people, that anybody who does this is intentionally trying to evade federal taxes. Now, of course, we could get into the fact that, you know, taxation is theft. So the fact that they're coming after these people at all is insane. But as it was alluded to earlier, as the story goes into fuller detail to talk about, even by the IRS's own rules, even if you accept taxation the way it is, like, they went out of their way to, like, speed up the process, because there's supposed to be a waiting period once these decisions are handed down. I think I lost it now, but there was one part. I think they were supposed to get 10 days after something was signed for them to be able to, you know, make certain arrangements, and they just waived everything and literally did it on the spot. There was the lawsuit claimed that federal agents were actually participating in the auction that took place. The IRS claims that none of their agents did, but there was a Dallas police officer from one of the local PDs that was there helping them, that did participate and purchase something at the auction. And then, of course, it quickly says that the Dallas police department cannot be reached for comment for this story, because of course they don't want to talk about that. You know, but this all stems from the government claiming, and again, they haven't proved anything. There hasn't even gone to court. There hasn't even gone to trial yet, as far as I can tell, as far as this story says. Just because the IRS claims that they owe money from 2005, 2008, and 2010, that they get to come in there and take all their stuff and shut down their business that they've had and operated and been providing a service to their community for over 22 years. And that's not an easy thing to do. So they must have been doing something right to stick around that long.
Right. Yeah.
And because it's, you know, I mean, obviously, if we dug into their particular story deeper, maybe you'd find something. But chances are, when they keep getting referred to as a mom and pop shop, this is probably a couple of immigrants from Thailand who literally moved here and just started a business and have just been doing nothing but keeping their nose clean and, you know, providing a good quality service for their community so their community keeps paying them to stay in business. And it seemed like, by all accounts, it was working out quite well until the IRS just, you know, came in and said, nope, you owe us money. We don't have to prove that you owe us money. We're going to get that money however we can. And as you know, said before, government screws everything up. They even screw this up, and they get half the money they thought they could easily acquire by selling off all this stuff.
Yeah, it's horrible. Like, you think they could have just taken their time and could have, like, recouped the entire difference, but yeah.
Yeah.
That's according to their own rules. Not to even mention that taxation itself is theft. It's like already a scam, but then they're even scamming the scam.
Yeah. Now, you know, like I said before, there's procedures that they're supposed to follow. And the agents showed up for the seizure, and they told the couple that they had to hand over a $10,000 check within 2 hours, or they were going to sell all of their stuff, which included 16,000, I don't know why it's in quotation marks, but quote unquote designer gowns worth more than $615,000. So wow. They took the product that was supposed to be, estimated to be worth $615,000 and sold it all for 17 grand. And this was all these people essentially owned at that point. And, you know, and it's insane because they use a special law that allows for them to speed up the process if the goods could perish or waste and become greatly reduced in value. Now, I'm no expert in clothing and fabrics, but I'm pretty sure that these things are not going to perish and waste in the matter of weeks that it should have taken if they had followed the law the way it is. Call me crazy.
Right. Yeah.
But, like, were these things, all these outfits set to just disintegrate in a week or something?
Well, I doubt that, because I've heard of a lot of women that have, like, their grandmother's dress in the closet, you know, that they could even still wear if they wanted to. So, yeah, they're not very perishable from what I've heard.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you have to take care of them, obviously. They will get, you know, things will get dried out and brittle. I understand that. But if they're in a store, I'm pretty sure they're in pretty decent condition. They're kept in good temperature, stuff like that, low humidity.
Exactly. They know what they're doing.
Yeah, but so because they used this BS law and applied it to this situation, they were able to waive the... There's supposed to be an advance notice of 10 days before selling the goods. So not only did they have an auction on the spot, but they had it so there was no, so it wasn't even available to the public per se. I mean, technically it was, but nobody knew about it. It was just most likely more officers and their friends and anybody else they wanted to tell. Hey, here right. You go.
Sounds we're having like this auction. Civil asset forfeiture we've been hearing about.
Yeah, well, that's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
That's exactly...
But for no crime.
Well, that's usually what civil asset forfeiture... Well. They say there's some crime, but we're just going to take your stuff. We'll figure it out later.
Unfortunately. It's armed robbery.
Absolutely. So, you know, what they ended up selling it for, it came down to, like, less than $4 per dress, which is insane considering, like, you know, you're talking about, you know, the numbers were 1,300 dresses and $615,000. Like I said, government, yeah. They screw everything up.
Meow.
Even math. Worms.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Talking to on radio. So we're back for the final segment. No redemption tonight, darn it. We're gonna go. But before we continue with the horrible story about the IRS. Well, that's kind of redundant. I think we forgot to mention Michael had sent us an email earlier. Coincidentally, after we had already discussed the Chelsea Manning tweet, he had sent us sent us saying, "Oh, you should probably talk about this," and he wanted us to mention his comments. Because he tweeted back to Chelsea. His first tweet was, "And you used to be so cool." And the second one was, "Wink if the government is making you say this."
Now, that one's humorous because it might be true.
Well, yeah, I heard a lot of people say that, you know, "Oh, dude, you know, she must have been brainwashed by the government, or the government, you know, that's why she got out, because, you know, you're gonna have to, yeah, we'll let you out.
Deal.
Yeah, this is the deal you're gonna make. You're gonna start, you know, being very pro-government and blah blah blah." So I don't know, but I don't really think that's the case, but that is pretty funny, Michael. So I did just want to mention that because I promised him I would get to that. Anyway, back to other horrible things the government does and the IRS story that we were talking about. So, you know, like I said, not only did the IRS show up there and jump through, you know, use all these different loopholes allegedly to speed up the process and have an auction, you know, literally show up there and say, "You have 2 hours to give us $10,000 or we're selling all your stuff." Not only did they sell off the dresses and then only receive $17,000 back off what was an estimated $615,000 worth of merchandise, they also seized other things that weren't on the list of things that they were supposed to be able to seize if they waited and did all the things properly that they were supposed to do, including the hat, ironically, the hat of a Vietnam veteran who was there to have badges sewn onto it. So it wasn't part of their inventory. It was somebody else's. They
it
took
was a
that.
Customer?
Yeah, it was a customer's hat. And according to the lawsuit, the IRS refused to give the hat back. On top of that, they also seized video game consoles, a surround sound system, a 65-inch TV, none of which were authorized by the judge's order. So, you know, they took pretty much everything that these people owned and anything these people had that worth value. They just took it all. You know, and then the article goes on to say the Government Accountability Office studied IRS tax seizures way back in 1999, and a report then made several recommendations after finding that some decisions to seize assets were quote unquote questionable.
You think?
Yeah, you think. So a decade and a half plus later, same tactics still being employed, just going after people. All for having the audacity to want to keep the fruits of their labor because they may or may not have even bothered, they have even asked for any of the services that the government is demanding that they pay for. You know, that's what this all boils down to. And that's why the IRS is still always, you know, the CIA can do a lot of damage, but the IRS is still one of the most dangerous entities within the federal government. And it also happens to be the one that strikes the fear in probably strikes the fear in more people's hearts than the police do, sadly enough.
They're worse than the mob, even.
Yeah. Like, they're the one. You tell people they're, you know, people get that letter from the IRS in the mail, your nether regions will shrivel. Because,
yeah.
You know, I've watched people who I've known to be, you know, pretty tough people and pretty put together people and pretty unflappable people. And that letter shows up and it's like they're a quivering mess because, you know, they know what the IRS can do to you. You know, you've seen it happen. I mean, look what happened to poor Erwin Schiff. The guy died in prison because he refused to back down. And, you know, they'll get you one way or another. But so, yeah, so this story was just horrible. Like I said, I know it started a couple of years ago, but the story just came up and recently. And This isn't an isolated case. The IRS does this all the time. And between that and the civil asset forfeiture between the police, they will literally just take your stuff from you.
Yep.
And you don't actually have to be charged with a crime. You're convicted.
Taxation is theft, and asset forfeiture is armed robbery.
Exactly. Well, thanks for joining me tonight, Shane. Thanks, everybody, for listening. For more of us, go to freedomfiends.com. Worms.